Well, good evening. It is so good to see all of you here tonight for our Sunday evening service. Looking forward to this evening and our ability to worship together, first of all, and then our opportunity for fellowship afterwards. Again, for those of you that weren't here this morning, I want to wish you a happy 4th of July, Independence Day. I'm glad that you're here with us. And if you're visiting with us, we are certainly delighted to have you in attendance with us tonight. I'm going to tell you that tonight's lesson is one that I did several years ago, but it was requested. So I'm going to do it again this evening. And so I appreciate you. If you've heard some of this, then it might help you and benefit you a little bit more again. And if you remember it from several years ago, but if it's new to you, which it should be new to quite a few, then hopefully it'll be something that'll be beneficial and helpful to all of us. We're going to be looking at 2 Samuel chapter 13 and 21. Those two chapters, they're going to deal with a tale of two brothers, and we want to look at these two brothers, and it may be that you've heard of them before, and maybe tonight this will be a lesson that you'll learn from. Maybe it's dealing with some characters in the Scriptures that are a little bit more obscure. But before we get into that, I want to tell you a story of an individual named Richard James Hart, who was born in Italy on March the 28th, 1892. And he came with his family to the New World, to the Americas, as an immigrant. But at the age of 16, he moved from Brooklyn to Nebraska, and he decided that he wanted to join the circus. He worked to lose his Brooklyn accent, tried to disguise his Italian ancestry as well, but I don't know if he was able to do it or not. Most people believe that he was able to do that. He enlisted in the United States Army in World War I, served in France, and earned a commission as a lieutenant. He married in 1919 and soon became a federal prohibition agent, making his home in Homer, Nebraska. Following a series of successful raids against bootleggers, he gained the nickname of Two Gun Hart. I love that, man. Isn't that a good name? I think there's probably some security people here at our congregation that would like to have that nickname, Two Gun Hart. Right? I mean, you know, quick on the draw, right? That's how he got his nickname, Two Gun Hart. In 1926, Hart became a special agent of the Bureau of Indian Affairs. He was assigned to the Cheyenne River Indian Reservation in South Dakota. While there, he once had the duty of protecting President Calvin Coolidge and his family on their visit to the Black Hills. He was later transferred to the Spokane Indian Reservation in Washington. He was credited with the arrest of at least 20 wanted killers while in that area, besides pursuing Indian lawbreakers and hunting down moonshine steals. He spent some time as a law enforcement officer on the Coeur d'Alene Reservation in Plumer, Idaho. Hart returned to Homer as a prohibition agent in 1931. With the repeal of prohibition 2 years later, he became a justice of the peace. He died in Nebraska in 1952 of a heart attack at the age of 60. Now, I tell you all of this when you think about this man and what he was able to accomplish, because his birth name was James Vincenzo Capone, and he was the oldest brother of the infamous Chicago gangster, Al Capone. He spent all of his life trying to get away from who he was and who he was related to. And here you have an example of one man who did everything in his power to do what's right and to stand for justice and the law, while his other brother was doing everything in his power to break the law. And so you have the story of Richard James Hart, who previously was known as James Vincenzo Capone. I think about this story, a second story tonight. This one deals with Robert Lincoln. Robert Lincoln was the only surviving son of President Abraham Lincoln. And during the war, he was at Harvard College, but thinking he would be better served to come home and enlist in the Union Army, he left college and took a train to Washington. While he was on his way from his college to Washington, he stopped over in Jersey City. They had a quick stop there, and he got out of the train and was looking around, but the crowd was so big that everybody was pressing up against him, and he ended up having to lean up against the train. Well, when the car began to move and the train began to go on, he fell between the train and the platform. One man through the crowd saw him and rushed over there and grabbed him by the collar and pulled him to safety. And had he not pulled him to safety, probably Abraham Lincoln would have had no surviving children. When the man rescued Robert Lincoln, Robert immediately saw his face and recognized him. He was a famous actor at that time, someone that we would probably think of like a George Clooney or a Leonardo DiCaprio, somebody that if we saw and if they rescued us from a moving train, we would instantly recognize them and be like, "Whoa, are you kidding me?" Somebody famous, right? We would recognize that face. Robert Lincoln recognized this famous actor's face, and he was so grateful for the opportunity of meeting him and so thankful that he had rescued him. When word got back to the president and those in government, there were letters that were written out to this individual and gratitude to him saving the president's son's life. What we come to find out is that man that rescued Robert Lincoln was Edwin Booth. And a few months later, his brother would assassinate the president. Edwin Booth was a unionist and voted for Lincoln. His brother was a segregationist. And we know the history there. A tale of two brothers. Well, we've seen this played out before in scriptures. I mean, we've got several examples of this. I mean, you've got these two stories here. The one brother trying to do everything to uphold the law and one brother doing everything in his power to break the law. You've got the story of a man who voted for the president and loved the president and was a unionist. And then you've got a man who despised the president and assassinated him. We've got stories like this in the Bible. You think about Cain and Abel. You have Abel who offered a sacrifice that was acceptable and pleasing to God, as we read about in Hebrews chapter 11. And he was commended for that. His brother Cain did not follow what God wanted him to do in offering the proper sacrifice. And because of that, God was displeased and it made Cain angry. And he went out and he slew his brother. You think about Jacob and Esau. You know the story behind these two guys. One of them was an outdoorsman. One of them was kind of a mama's boy. And you know what happens here. You know that Jacob ended up doing exactly what his parents told him to do and going off into the land where their relatives lived so that he could take a wife. But because Esau was so angry at Jacob and his family, he would not listen to his parents. And when he saw that it made his parents angry for him to marry people that were not of their kind, he went out and did it more, just so he could aggravate his folks. Biblical examples. One serving God, one not serving God. One doing everything in their power to try to do what's right and what is good and what is just, and others that are doing everything in their power to be as wretched and evil as they can be. Well, tonight, we're going to talk about two brothers. Maybe you've not considered this evening. I want to call your attention, first of all, to 2 Samuel chapter 13. And so if you would turn with me to that particular text. We're going to begin in verse 1 and read through verse 6. Now what we're going to read about is a horrible story. But the story is here just to set up the lesson for this evening. Beginning in verse 1, "Now Absalom, David's son, had a beautiful sister whose name was Tamar. And after a time, Amnon, David's son, loved her, and Amnon was so tormented that he made himself ill because of his sister Tamar, for she was a virgin, and it seemed impossible to Amnon to do anything to her. But Amnon had a friend whose name was Jonadab, the son of Shimeah, David's brother. And Jonadab was a very crafty man. And he said to him, 'O son of the king, why are you so haggard morning after morning? Will you not tell me?' And Amnon said to him, 'I love Tamar, my brother Absalom's sister.' Jonadab said to him, 'Lie down on your bed and pretend to be ill. And when your father comes to see you, say to him, "Let my sister Tamar come and give me bread to eat and prepare the food in my sight, that I may see it and eat it from her hand."' So Amnon lay down and pretended to be ill. And when the king came to see him, Amnon said to the king, 'Please let my sister Tamar come and make a couple of cakes in my sight that I may eat from her hand. Now, that's where we're going to stop. We're going to stop right there because you know the rest of the story. You know what Amnon did to his sister Tamar and how wretchedly he behaved as a brother or a half-brother to her. We're not going to get into all of that, but what we are going to focus on is we're going to focus on this individual that maybe you've not paid as close attention to as you should have in the Scriptures. We got a man named Jonadab, the son of Shimea, David's brother. Now, when you go back in history and you think about David's brothers, you're going to be reminded about Samuel going to Jesse's house. And Jesse had these sons, had seven sons. And if you'll recall, Saul has angered God to the point that God has rejected him. And God says, you're not going to be the king any longer. And he says to Samuel, Samuel, I want you to go and anoint another king out of the house of Jesse. Now, this wasn't because Samuel was ready to do that just yet, because Samuel was still grieving over Saul, the Scriptures record. You see, although initially it seems as though Samuel is very upset when the Jews come to him or the Hebrews and say, we want a king, he thinks that they are rejecting him. God said, no, no, Samuel, don't be upset. They're not rejecting you. They are rejecting me. Because, you know, Samuel, prior to this, he had kind of been the judge. He had been a prophet. He had been working there at the tabernacle prior to that even. So Samuel was very involved in the leadership of the Jewish people at that particular time. But they've said, we want to be like all the other nations and we want a king. And so Samuel's a little upset initially because he believes that they're rejecting him. But God says, they're not rejecting you, they're rejecting me. So he gives them a king. And then after that, it seems like Samuel kind of got on board with it. I don't know if maybe, you know, sometimes when you've been doing a lot of the work and you get somebody that takes on a lot of the load that maybe you were doing, you're like, you know what, I kind of like that. So maybe Samuel kind of got behind him a little bit and said, you know what, I am glad to have this guy doing what I was doing before this. And so he was in favor of Saul until Saul made his mistakes and angered God, and God rejected him. So now Samuel's grieving about it. So I think that Samuel truly was pulling for Saul. He was pulling for Saul to succeed. God said, it's time to get over it. I got somebody for you to go anoint. I want you to go to the house of Jesse. Of course, you remember what happens when he goes to the house of Jesse. He says, I'm here to anoint one of your sons. And he brings out the best one. And the first one is Eliab, right? When Samuel sees him, he's like, oh, yeah. Woo! My goodness, that guy looks like Caleb Martin. Man, yeah, he's got to be the king. Good-looking dude. And he says, no, that's not that guy. What about Levi Barnes? Oh, yeah, that's got to be the dude. Levi Barnes, man, yeah. No, that second son, he comes out and he looks good, you know. Nope, that's not him either. First son was really Eliab, and then there was Abinadab. And then the third son that he brings out was Shimea. Shimea, you know, the test, you know, good looking. Nope. Eventually, he says, you have other sons. All of the other sons are brought before him, and none of those are who God selects. He says, all right, I'd like to know, do you have any more kids? Yeah, the youngest one, he's out there taking care of the sheep. We can bring him in. That's who I want. That's who I want. Brought in David. You'll remember how that David's three older brothers in 1 Samuel chapter 17 had gone with Saul. They had followed him into battle. You remember this battle, don't you? This is the battle against the Philistines. And remember, they had this really good warrior that would come out every day and he would stand out in front of his army and he would defy the armies of the living God. And he would call them out and say, hey, listen, I got a deal for you. There doesn't have to be a lot of bloodshed today. Only one person has to die. That's it. Now, you bring your champion out, and if I whoop him, then you serve us, and if he whoops me, then we'll serve you. Really, I mean, just one person, that's it. The only person that has to die is just one individual. And I'm not even saying it's me. Right? I mean, Goliath felt pretty confident, and I can understand why. I mean, if you're 9 feet tall, and everybody else is a dwarf compared to you, you probably feel pretty good about yourself. You know, he defied them. So David was sent by his father to go bring some supplies to his brothers. David comes that day, bringing the supplies, and he hears what that giant has to say. Well, guess who's there in the army with Saul? Three oldest brothers. Among those would be this gentleman, Shimei. Now, we're not going to be dealing with Shimei as much, but I want you to know who he is so that you understand the content and the context of the stories that we're telling. So, Shimei, the third oldest brother of King David. Well, going back to our story now, here in 2 Samuel chapter 13. You've got this fella named Jonadab. This is King David's nephew. And apparently he hung around the palace, or at least he liked to hang around David's sons quite a bit. Because now he is here and he sees Amnon, and he's a friend of Amnon. That's what the scriptures record, that he's a friend. Now, Amnon had a friend named Jonadab, the son of Shimei. So his first cousin, they're good friends. Real good friends. And he sees Amnon, how he is so haggard every day, and he asks him, "What in the world is the matter with you? What's the problem?" Wanted to know. Well, I want to tell you a little bit about Jonadab. I want us to think about some of the things that he did. You see, he's the kind of guy that had a heart that devised evil plans. And think about the story that he's come up with. Think about the plot, the plan that he has schemed for Amnon. Amnon didn't come up with this plan. He's got a friend. And the friend says, "I want you to tell me what's the matter, and I'm going to solve your problem for you," right? I'm going to solve it. And he tells him, "This is the plan. Here's how you can get what you want, and it is a vile, and it is a wicked, and an evil, and wretched plan." But it was a plan. And I think about Jonadab, this son of Shimei, and he was a man who had a heart that devised evil plans. And what does Proverbs 6:18 tell us about that? "Yea, six things the Lord doth hate. Yea, seven are what? An abomination." And guess what? One of the seven is a heart that devises evil plans. Here's a man who behaved in a way that was abominable to God. Not only that, he was more than happy to sow discord among brethren. See, he's got this plan. He shared this plan with Amnon. Amnon executes this plan. But after he does this wicked thing to his sister, then he hates her more passionately than he loved her before the incident, and he sent her away. He treated her so terribly. And so now we're sowing discord among the brethren, because when her brother Absalom finds out about it, he is not pleased at all. And I'll tell you something else. Absalom devised a plan too. We'll hear about that plan in a minute. He devised a plan too. And it wasn't going to be very good for his brother. I can tell you that. And so here he is sowing discord among the brethren. Guess what we find in Proverbs 6:19? Once again, one of the seven abominable things that are mentioned there. Among them, sowing discord among brethren. Among brethren. Well, this is not how the story of Jonadab ends. In fact, we're going to have to move on again, and we're going to have to look at another section of Scripture dealing with him. I want us to go to 2 Samuel chapter 13. Just turn over in your page, or if it's on the same page, just look over to verse 30, and we're going to begin there, and we're going to read. "While they were on the way, news came to David, 'Absalom has struck down all the king's son, and not one of them is left.'" Whoa, wait a second. We need the backstory to that, don't we? What's going on? I'll tell you what's going on. Absalom devised a plan too. And he went to King David and he said, "Hey, Father, I want you and I want all of my brethren to come and I want us to have a big party at the house. I'm going to sponsor that party and I want everybody to come and eat." And David says, no, son, you can't handle that many people. That would be way too much of a burden for you, for all of us to come to your house so that we can feast with you. But that's what he says. I want to have a feast. Well, David says, no, I'm not going to come, son. I don't want to be a burden and I don't want everybody else to come. But Absalom kept pressing him and he said, I want you to let all my brothers come and I want you to especially invite Amnon. Now, David should have known something was up, but maybe Absalom convinced him, I just really think we need to bury the hatchet. Well, he was going to bury a hatchet. So David says, he was a little suspicious, I believe, because the scripture records, why do you want your brother Amnon to come? But Absalom pressed him till finally David gave in, said, yeah, that's fine. So Amnon went to the party too. Well, Absalom had it planned that when he gave the signal, all of his servants were going to fall on Amnon and slay him. And they did exactly that. When the other brothers saw what was taking place at the feast, they all got up. And if you'll remember this morning, we made reference to this. The other brothers, the other sons of David got up and they got on their mules and got out of there. Now, why do you think that they ran so much? Well, it was not uncommon back in those days when somebody was trying to occupy the throne, that they would eliminate all of those that would be competitors to that throne. You can read about that. You can even read about grandparents who murdered all of their grandchildren to make sure that they were able to come to power in a particular kingdom. And so it maybe looked like on this occasion that Absalom is trying to usurp the throne, which he would eventually try to do. So this is probably not unusual behavior for him, but it looked like to the brothers, he's trying to eliminate every one of us. He's going to knock out the entire royal line. And so they got on their donkeys and they fled. But word came to David that they had all been killed. That's what we find here in verse 30. While they were on the way, news came to David, Absalom has struck down all the king's sons and not one of them is left. Then the king arose and tore his garments and lay on the earth, and all his servants who were standing by tore their garments. But Jonadab, here he is again, the son of Shimea, David's brother, said, let not my lord suppose that they have killed all the young men, the king's sons, for Amnon alone is dead. For by the command of Absalom, this has been determined from the day he violated his sister Tamar. Now therefore, let not my lord the king so take it to heart as to suppose that all the king's sons are dead, for Amnon alone is dead. Listen to verse 35. And Jonadab said to the king, behold, the king's sons have come. As your servant said, so it has come about. So while he was standing there talking to David, those other sons start arriving so that David can see that they're not dead. And so now, here Jonadab says, the sons are back, just like I told you was going to happen. Man, this guy is a piece of work, isn't he? I mean, you think about this fella. I'm not mistaken. Over in verse 3 of the same chapter says, but Amnon had a friend. Let me tell you what I think about this guy. This guy, Jonadab, he was in on everybody's business. He decided against warning his friend. And guess what? He knew about the plot. He told King David at the end of that chapter, no. Not all of your sons are dead. This is what Absalom has been planning since the day Amnon violated his sister Tamar. He knew about the plot. He knew what Absalom had in mind. And he was such a great friend that he didn't say a word. He let him go to his death. Not a word. He's a guy that's in on everybody's business. You see him, he's kind of like a weasel. He's standing there right by David, right? And so at any moment that he might be able to insert himself into the scene so that he looks good, he's going to do it. So when David's upset, he's the guy that's going to bring him some good news. And so maybe he would win favor with the king. That's the kind of guy he was. And he didn't warn his friend. And he told people what they wanted to hear and what Amnon needed to hear so that he could get on Amnon's good side. He did it. And when he saw that Absalom was determined to kill his brother Amnon, he didn't go to his friend and tell him about the plot. No, because if he had done that, then Absalom would be upset with him too. So he's not going to say anything about that. He's going to stand there and he's going to tell David everything's okay. All of your sons are just fine. He was that kind of guy. And you've known people like that, like to be in everybody's business. I'm going to give you the good news. When I think about this also, when I think about Jonadab, he didn't even take credit for helping cause this entire mess. You think about that. He's the spark that started this explosion. And he didn't come to King David and say, you know, Uncle David, I need to confess. I need to tell you something. I've made a huge mistake. I gave Amnon some bad advice, and he did what he did, and now Absalom's angry with him and wants to kill him, and I am the reason. Didn't take credit, not one bit. He's just the kind of guy that likes to set things in motion and watch the world burn. Wicked, evil. Now, I want to introduce you to another guy, Jonathan, the son of Shimea, David's brother. And I want to invite you to turn over to 2 Samuel chapter 21. 2 Samuel chapter 21. And I want us to begin reading in verse 18. I've told everybody this before. There are going to be a lot of names here. And I'm going to run through these like I know what I'm talking about. Because that's what preachers do. That's a preacher secret. Just pronounce it like you know what it says and keep moving, right? So here we go. It says, after this, there was again war with the Philistines at Gob. Then Sibekah the Hushathite struck down Saph, who was one of the descendants of the giants. And there was again war with the Philistines at Gob, and Elhanan, the son of Jaareoregim, the Bethlehemite, struck down Goliath the Gittite, the shaft of whose spear was like a weaver's beam. And there was again war at Gath, where there was a man of great stature, who had 6 fingers on each hand and 6 toes on each foot, 24 in number, and he also was descended from the giant. And when he taunted Israel, Jonathan, the son of Shimea, David's brother, struck him down. These 4 were descended from the giants in Gath, and they fell by the hand of David and by the hand of his servants. Here's a guy who maybe hung around his uncle and got the good stuff. Because we got this great man of stature here, first of all, in 2 Samuel chapter 21. He has 6 fingers and 6 toes, 6 fingers on each hand, 6 toes on each feet, 24 in number, great in stature. And he did what? He taunted the armies of Israel. What does that remind you of? When David, his uncle, heard Goliath taunting the armies of Israel, he did something about it. And Jonathan, the son of Shimea, David's brother, he did something about it. And he slew that giant. 2 things I want you to remember about this brother right here. Number one, if I can get the thing to come up, he was a warrior for King David. A warrior. When you think about this from a spiritual perspective for us, I think about 1 Timothy chapter 6, verses 11 through 16. We won't read them all or quote them all, but here in this particular passage of Scripture, Paul tells Timothy, I want you to wage the good warfare. He was a warrior for his king. He was a defender of his king. He was a defender of his nation. You think about the church being the Christian nation. And we're supposed to contend for the faith that was once for all delivered for the saints. That's what Jude 3 tells us. We're supposed to defend what Jesus has to say. Oh no, we're not out there to try to be ugly or mean-spirited or to hurt people. We're not to do that. But we are to defend the truths of God's Word and defend Christianity in the church. And here, Jonadab was a defender of his nation, Jonathan. And the question is, are we? 1 Peter 2:9, we are a holy nation, a royal priesthood, peculiar people, to show forth the praise of Him who called us out of darkness into His marvelous light. That's who we are as Christians. So this Jonathan, son of Shimeah, David's brother, he was a warrior for the king, and he was a defender of his people, his kingdom, his nation. Now here's the point that I think we need to consider as our conclusion tonight. Number one, what kind of brethren are we towards one another? Which brother are we most like? Are we more like Jonadab or Jonathan? Do we sow discord or manipulate those around us? Are we always working the system for our benefit? Do we change our clothes, figuratively speaking, to fit the situation? Do we tell people what they want to hear? Are we like Jonadab, who knew his friend was headed for death and said nothing? Are we those types of friends to those around us that we know are headed someplace where there's eternal death? Are we like that brother? How do we treat our brethren? Or are we more like Jonathan? Are we friends to our king and defenders of his kingdom? You have to tell the two brothers tonight. You've got Jonadab, the son of Shimeah. You've got Jonathan, the son of Shimeah. One did everything in his power to mess things up, be a plague, a troublemaker. One did everything in his power to defend what was right. Where do we fall tonight? If you're not someone who is a defender of the kingdom, the church, if you're not an individual who is a warrior dedicated to your king, then tonight I want you to become one. I want to invite you to become one. Jesus invites you to be a part of his kingdom, to be one of his servants. That's what we find out about Jonathan, warrior for his king, defender of his people, and a servant. A servant. If you'd like to serve Jesus tonight with your life, and you've not made the decision to do so yet, please do now while we stand and sing.